Welcome. My name is Iman Jadun, intern at EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. Today we're going to talk about monitoring fish tissue concentrations at Superfund sites. One of the largest risks to humans from contaminated sediments in the nation's rivers, lakes, and other water bodies come from eating fish caught in these waters. Many of the most common contaminants and sediments accumulate in the aquatic food chain and may be found at high concentrations in fish tissue. Superfund remedies at these sites clean up the contaminants in the sediment, but their ultimate goal is to reduce the contaminants in the fish tissue. Understanding how contaminant concentrations in fish change before, during, and after the construction of a Superfund remedy is a critical aspect in evaluating whether the remedy has achieved its goals. Using fish tissue to monitor remedy effectiveness is the first fact sheet in the Sediment Assessment Monitoring Sheet, or SAMS, series published by EPA Office of Superfund. This SAMS provides information on the use of tissue residue data for monitoring the effectiveness of sediment remedies at Superfund sites and briefly states the factors that are important for designing and implementing fish sampling at sites. Here to give us more information on fish tissue sampling are Dr. Lawrence Burkhardt and Dr. John Connolly. Lawrence Burkhardt is a research chemist in EPA's Office of Research and Development. Lawrence has a PhD in water chemistry from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and is a member of Superfund's Contaminated Sediments Technical Advisory Group. His work includes investigations on the effects and behavior of bioaccumulative toxicants in the aquatic organisms and their food webs, as well as the analysis of environmental samples from known and unknown bioaccumulative toxicants. John Connolly is a principal at Anchor QEA, whose largest practice area is assessment and remediation of contaminated sediments and has been working on contaminated sediments projects since the late 1970s. He has been involved with many high-profile Superfund sites where he designed fish monitoring programs and interpreted fish monitoring data. John has a PhD in environmental engineering from the University of Texas at Austin and is a member of the National Academy of Engineering. Welcome, Lawrence and John.
Thanks, Iman. It's nice to be here.
Thank you, Yvonne, as well.
Let us start by Lawrence addressing which contaminants occur at contaminated sediment sites and which ones appear in fish tissue.
In sediments, a large number of chemicals can appear. They include chemicals like phthalates, phenols, chlorinated pesticides, including DDTs, lindane, aldrin, polychlorinated biphenyl, PCBs, chlorinated dioxins and furans, PAHs, and metals, including mercury and selenium. Chemicals that form residues in fish at Superfund sites are generally PCBs, dioxins and furans, DDTs, and mercury.
And of those, PCBs are by far the most common at Superfund sites. There are 72 large Superfund sites that EPA is involved with, and of those, PCBs are a risk through fish at 28 of those sites.
What are some characteristics of compounds that determine how they bioaccumulate?
For the organic compounds that Lawrence went through, it's really their tendency to accumulate in fat tissue once they're taken up by the organism. The chemicals that most strongly partition into the fat are the ones that bioaccumulate. They tend to have very low aqueous solubilities and very high octanol water partition coefficients, which measure their tendency to want to be in a nonpolar phase like lipid, octanol representing a lipid-like phase, rather than being in water.
Additionally, as we mentioned, they're not ionizable, they're nonpolar, and they're not significantly biotransformed by the fish species themselves. Mercury is different, though. Rather than binding to lipids, it actually binds to proteins and has a totally different uptake mechanism in comparison to organic chemicals.
So it is interesting to note that mercury has its own category among the compounds.
Yes, it really is. And in fact, it's not universally understood. In some cases, people lipid normalize fish data for mercury, believing that the mercury is in the lipid when in fact it's in the protein.
What are the goals of a monitoring program?
The goals of the monitoring program should be defined in the record of decision. In general, the goals of monitoring programs are to document the trend of the chemical residues in the fish over time at the site. or potentially to document a certain level of reduction in chemical residues in fish over time. Overall, the monitoring programs provide the data to document remedy effectiveness and risk reduction at the site.
So, to clarify, we expect them to decline due to the remedy?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we certainly hope so.
What should you consider when planning to collect contaminant data in fish and other aquatic organisms?
The first thing to consider are the objectives of the program. I mean, we're collecting the fish for perhaps one of two purposes. Clearly, as Lawrence indicated, we're collecting the fish to monitor the decline that occurs over time in order to evaluate remedy effectiveness. Typically, there's a consumption advisory in place, and another use of the data is to evaluate whether that advisory can be lifted. And that's something that the state public health agency would do. And they have different data needs for that. So considering how the data will be used affect how you will design the program.
In designing the program, you want to collect fish that are going to be present at the site for the long haul. By that, I mean it's going to be here 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years, 30 years, maybe even 50 years from now. Additionally, you want to collect fish species that are there in abundant numbers that you can actually collect them and not harm the natural resource.
Another thing to be concerned about is to make sure that you are collecting fish of a similar size in this program. Since levels of contaminants in fish can vary with the age and the size of the fish, you try to narrow that range to reduce the variability. And you want to have the program year after year after year targeting the same fish and the same size fish.
You also want to be collecting fish consistently over time, the same locations, the same time windows from year to year to year. And similarly, that you want to be collecting fish at the same frequency. Once a year or twice a year is probably optimal. More than that's probably not necessary.
They also should know that you want to be cognizant of the analytical methods that are being used and be consistent in the analytical methods over time, or if the methods change because they're improved and you want to use the improved method, understand the relationship between the data collected with the old method and the data collected with the new method.
Now, what is the relationship between the composition of the organism and contaminant accumulation?
For organic chemicals like PCBs and DDTs, they partition to fat or lipids in the organism, as we previously mentioned. As a result, fish with higher lipid contents will have higher chemical residues on a wet basis in comparison to a fish with lower lipid contents.
Because the lipid contents vary year to year, we have to be cognizant of the variability that exists, not because of changes in exposure necessarily, but because fish in 1 year may have higher lipids than fish in another simply because of environmental stresses that the fish are exposed to.
So more lipids yield higher chemical concentrations?
That is correct.
And how many samples do you need to take?
There are simple statistical methods that are documented in the SAMS document that show you how to evaluate the number of samples that you need. And what really controls that is the variability in the baseline data and the trend you're trying to see. And the methods allow you then to just say, these are the number of samples you need if you want to see a trend of a certain magnitude.
The SAM document does give you a kind of a starting point of five composites consisting of five fish per composite per location. That's kind of a minimum starting place. Doing the statistics will allow you to refine that.
Now, having good baseline data is important, but what does good baseline data entail?
Good baseline data allows one to establish with confidence the mean residues and its variability in the fish population prior to any remedial action. Good baseline data would consist of repeated measurements over time spanning multiple years, 3, maybe 4 years actually. Multi-year sampling is needed in order to account for year-to-year variability in the chemical residues in fish. That, in part, is caused by changes in lipid content of the fish due to weather and climate and that kind of thing. Most definitely, one sampling event is not adequate for baseline data.
I don't think we can overemphasize the importance of having good baseline data. It provides us the information we need about variability to design the sampling program and also provides us the starting point for evaluating remedy effectiveness.
Thank you, Lawrence and John, for coming and sharing your thoughts on fish tissue data.
Thanks for having us, Iman.
Thank you very much as well.
Now, for a quick recap, we discussed that first, fish monitoring is the first step in determining remedy. Second, planning ahead will yield better results. And last, baseline data will help in discerning trends and should be considered step one. If you would like further information, please visit the SAMS document on fish tissue data to monitor remedy effectiveness.